Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
John Anik, Kenny Florian.
Oh, my God!
You want a podcast? Great. So you have some audio on your website that nobody goes to.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, is it great to be back with you? It is Monday, January 20th, the year 2020, episode 233 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. That sweatshirt you're wearing?
Yeah.
That like MC Esoteric or something?
Absolutely. You believe that. It's Inspect the Deck from Wu-Tang and MC Esoteric. So these guys are great. Czarface. The new album, relatively new anyway. Go check it out. It's pretty sick.
So yeah. When you wear that sweatshirt, it helps the show.
It helps. See?
It does. Well, Martin Luther King Day here in the United States. Ken Flo looking good as always. One of the most important holidays of the year, officially observed in all 50 states, not until the year 2000. You believe that, Ken Flo?
Wow.
But an important day. It means the kids are home from school. Such a blessing that is, right? All downstairs making a bunch of fucking noise. But what a weekend it was. UFC 246, McGregor versus Cowboy. Ray Longo coming up here in a minute to open the show. But a huge weekend for Conor McGregor, a huge fight week for Conor McGregor. Say what you will about Donald Cerrone, and we certainly will talk about his side of things. And Conor McGregor was absolutely a 3-1 favorite this weekend. But you talk about maximizing the showcase. You talk about style points. You talk about doing as much with this fight and this week in front of him as he possibly could have. It was a banner week for Conor McGregor. You thought it was going to be a quick one, Ken Flo. You were convicted in that as respectfully as you could be. And 40 seconds in, Conor McGregor gets it done, obviously, in a big way.
A huge weekend for Conor McGregor, but perhaps a bigger weekend for the UFC. You think about how much was on the line. The UFC just is not as interesting with Conor McGregor out of the picture. That's just a fact. And I think with Conor McGregor coming back and looking as good as he did, I thought was huge for the organization. It was huge for Conor McGregor, of course. And I think that for him, if he wanted that next big fight, whether it's Masvidal, Gaethje, Habib, whatever it is, I think a lot of people probably felt that he needed to look good to justify that next big fight. He certainly did that. He made it look easy, man, and just an amazing performance. Besides him kind of leaping forward and looking for that knockout shot for his first punch right off the bat, once he settled in, I mean, it was just all Conor McGregor. You know, everyone's talking about these shoulder shots, and yes, right, we've seen them before. I've worked them. A lot of people have done these in fights. But to throw them with that kind of effectiveness, you have to be super loose. And it's thrown like a whip. And to be able to do it like that with that kind of effectiveness, bloodying the nose of Cerrone. I mean, first 10 seconds of that fight, Cerrone already had a bruised orbital from that knee. His nose was bloody. I mean, it was just complete violence from Conor McGregor to start that fight.
It's funny because I was going to lead with you on the shoulder strikes, and I'm glad you referenced the whip, because when I was doing the post show with Chael Sonnen and Michael Bisping, I forget who brought it up, but some were suggesting not only was the angle great and the level change with the shoulder strikes, but that instead of maybe hitting with that front meaty part of the shoulder, that the angle was such that he hit with that bone on top of the shoulder. Either way, very damaging, and either way, Ray Longo's on hold, so let's not keep him there. Let's get to the Ray Longo Minute.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Oh, starring Ray Longo is right. No sponsor for the Ray Longo Minute this week. I'm told that Ray is unable to be on video. Sponsor wants to see you, Ray. They want to see if you've been working out in the tanning booth of late. I told them yes.
Yeah, I should be in the tanning booth, John, because it's about 14 degrees in Long Island today. It's yeah. Freezing out, man. I feel like living in the tanning booth, but no. I'm white as a ghost, and I'm ready. Let's see how many people we can piss off today, John.
I know, right. I know. Yeah. For better or for worse, rightfully so or not, you're sort of, at least for our listeners, the poster child for the anti-Conor McGregor movement. So,
the point is I'm anti-Conor McGregor antics. I like the guy that shows up in fights, and he's humble and, you know, analyzes the fights the right way and doesn't get too crazy. That's cool, you know.
So all indications were, being there during fight week, that Conor McGregor had put in all the right work, that he got back to a great communication way with his coaches, right? You heard him say that he's sharing his instincts and his thoughts with them when maybe there was a time when he wasn't doing that. I think they did a great job just moving past everything and focusing on what was ahead of them, being desperate, being hungry. And I thought, even though we only got 40 seconds, Ray, that Conor just looked outstanding.
Well, look, man, he definitely showed up to fight. And, it can't be easy with all the personal stuff and all everything that's been going on. So, you know, hats off to him. He did come to fight. It's a big win for the UFC. And I feel bad for Cerrone, you know what I mean? Because I like the guy. I think he's been great for the UFC. I was hoping he could overcome his demons and show up and put on a good performance, but it looked like those old instincts, you know, froze him up again.
So Kenny and I were talking offline that if I was paid $100 a second in there, how long could I last? Maybe 15 seconds. You just get on a bike and run. I don't know. But from a fight IQ standpoint, and I'm not really bringing it up to be funny as much as I am bringing it up to sort of talk about the Cerrone side of things and why he didn't retreat, and knowing the danger of those first few minutes, why he maybe didn't disengage. I mean, maybe he didn't think he could be overpowered in the clinch. It all happened very quickly. What are your thoughts on Cerrone from an IQ standpoint and why he wasn't able to adjust despite the brevity of the fight?
Man, I got to tell you, I have no idea, besides the fact that what I saw is just a guy that looked like he froze up. I mean, he slips the left hand. I would have thought just instinctively that guy ends up on his back. You know, I mean, he almost went over him. Right. And then he got hit with a couple of shoulder bumps, which is definitely nothing new. And he, instead of knee and the elbow, I don't know what he did. You'd have to ask him what was going on. It looked like he just froze up to me.
Ray, for me,
I mean, fight IQ, obviously, I think Kenny, there was no fight IQ. There was,
right.
I don't think he, well, I don't know what he did.
Well, I think that was my problem heading into this fight, is Donald, you know, he's such a proud guy and he's such a tough guy that he leads with that in a lot of his fights and kind of pays for it. But for all those people out there that are saying that Donald Cerrone took a dive or the UFC paid off Cowboy, I mean, it kind of makes me sick to my stomach to hear that and see that, out there. I think that it's an easy solution, Ray, is you get those people to get hit by a professional fighter just like Donald Cerrone did, and then ask them if they think it's actually still a fixed fight or not. But, okay. Ray, did you see any of those comments, and what did you think about people? I mean, you've been in the fight game a long time. Does that look like he threw the fight to you?
Well, I'll tell you, here's the weird part of that, though, Kenny, is that the rumors, like, you know, 3 weeks ago, a month, that he was going to throw the fight, and then the fight goes like that. It couldn't have been a worst-case scenario. If that rumor never came out, I go, yeah. But the fact that it came out, like, why would that have even come out? And then you see that. So I think it gave those guys that wanted to see that,
yeah.
It gave them traction. And, you know, look, it's a win for the UFC, right? They control the narrative of this thing, right? The most bonuses, the most this, the most that. They didn't obviously they weren't going to advertise the guy was coming off of two knockout losses. So
sure,
they did a great job in selling that fight. But the reality was, like, I feel bad for Justin Gaethje. He just did the same thing to him. Nobody even cared. It was just another fight, you know. Exactly. And you know, Conor knocks him out. They're gonna ride this thing because, you know, look, it's a moneymaker. So for them, that was a huge, huge thing. But again, I do think they did a great job of controlling the narrative and highlighting all the good points. And, you know, obviously you don't want to do that as a promotion, bring up the bad points. But, you know, I think when you look at the whole thing, it just gave some of those haters or whatever you want to call them, doubters, just traction. I mean, if that thing never came up, I'm saying that wouldn't have been brought up. But the fact that it was brought up a couple of weeks ago was weird, you know. And then the way the fight played out, you know, I don't know. Because I did see it, and I've had people calling me, you know, what do you think? He didn't get hit with the shin. He didn't get hit with the foot. He got hit with a toe. You know, I'm hearing everything. So, I don't know. I mean, I was really hoping that Cerrone, I wanted Donald to win the fight. I really did. I you know, the grandmother thing, everything just looks like a feel-good story if he could get the win. But, and you know, on the other side, I'm happy for McGregor. Look, the guy, without a doubt, has done a lot for the sport, and he's a showman for sure. And he comes to fight, and he brings an intensity and ambiance to that octagon like nobody else. So, you know, hats off to him, you know. But from a pure fight standpoint, you know, I would have rather seen him fight Justin Gaethje. He just beat Cerrone. Why take a guy coming off of two losses? You know, as a fight fan, there's so many great fights to make. I would have, you know, rather have seen that, to be honest with you.
Well, and I think that's a lot of that is, that's revisionist history, though, of course. But, we've had that conversation, and obviously that might have been a pick 'em fight according to Las Vegas, and Conor McGregor wouldn't have been a 3-1 favorite. But people really do want to knock the value and the quality of this win against Donald Cerrone. And even though Cerrone's performance certainly left a little bit to be desired, at the end of the day for Conor McGregor, with all the pressure on him, you still have to go out and deliver. You know, he did do it, I think, a little bit.
But wait,
hang
down.
On. Hang on, he still did do it a little bit quicker than Justin Gaethje.
And at 170.
And, yeah, well, right, and at 170 pounds. So, Ray, as we do spin it forward,
John and Kenny, at that point, he did it at 170. Why would you give the guy a shot at 155 then? Against
Khabib? Well,
why would you talk about that? Why not talk about, you know, Usman or even Jorge Masvidal?
Well, and it seems like because of the calendar that it is gonna spin that way, because Khabib and Tony are going to fight in April, and the earliest that Conor would be fighting for the Undisputed Lightweight title would be September or October. So, but Kenny and I were sort of talking a little bit, I believe, off air, and we were going to get into it. This performance, this effort, doesn't give you any more confidence in him against Jorge Masvidal, per se, Ray? Or does this maybe make that fight more intriguing for you competitively?
He comes, I think when you're fighting him, you're fighting not just him, you're fighting whatever else he brings into the octagon. So he's going to hype it up, and you have to overcome a couple of things. So it looks like, again, like even with Cerrone, and it wasn't really, he didn't, you know, what I liked about Conor this time, there wasn't a lot of build up to the fight, and he had respect for Cowboy and vice versa. And I love that. That part, you know, I'm always going to love. But he does bring an ambiance that could, you know, alter the course of that fight, you know, which is great. So I think a fight between him and Masvidal would be fantastic for everybody.
You know, for me, you know, I know you mentioned Gaethje, and that's a fight that we've talked about that I would love to see. But, you know, I do not see Gaethje getting by Conor. I actually think that he has a style that favors Conor. He comes forward. Conor's a tremendous counter puncher.
Yes, yes.
If Dustin Poirier could knock out Justin Gaethje, there's no doubt in my mind that Conor could do the same thing, perhaps quicker. Still a dangerous fight just because of Gaethje's power and his willingness to get in there. So that alone, of course, is always going to be a danger for anybody just based on Gaethje's style. But because he does come forward like that, I think that's a fight that's kind of tailor-made for Conor.
No, I agree 100% with you, Kenny, but my point was, I think Gaethje earned the right for that fight before Conor.
It's a valid point.
That's all
it's a valid point. Absolutely.
You know, that's the only issue. Why not take that fight? That would have been, to me, if you're really analyzing it, you got to take the guy that beat him, not, you know, two guys, you know, not coming off of two losses. You know, I would have rather seen him fight Gaethje.
Especially if the plan is to fight Khabib for the belt at 55.
Without a doubt. You're in the 155 thing. And like you say, it's a perfect fight. It's more like an Eddie Alvarez fight where a guy's coming forward and Khan is a great counterpuncher. And I think that would have... I'm just saying, you know, linear... I mean, some sort of logic, it would have made more sense. You know what I mean? So, and I think the fans would have appreciated that more.
And that's fair. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, Raymond, you got anything else before we let you fly? I met Tom Brady Saturday night. That was kind of fun.
Wait, what'd you... I didn't hear that. What was that?
I just said I met Tom Brady Saturday night. I was just telling you it was kind of fun to be able to thank Tom Brady
for everything he's done. That was a great post you put up.
Yeah. Well, thanks,
I'll tell
buddy.
You got to give Conor credit, man. Everybody came out for that fight. I mean, it was... I don't remember that many people being at a fight before. He had a lot of high-profile celebs, no?
He brings them out. He brings the athletes out, especially.
I mean, he really has done... Look, that, I don't think anybody's come close to doing a job that he's done with that, man. He has crossed barriers with a lot of sports, and, you know, it's actually wild to watch.
Yeah.
Well, I really believe that he's back for legacy and back to add to what he's already done and wanting to prove himself not just as the biggest superstar in mixed martial arts, but one of the greatest of all time. You know, he wants to be mentioned in that George St. Pierre, John Jones conversation. And that's a big reason. That's a big cornerstone of this whole return and fighting season and everything else.
Yeah, that'll be great. That's a win-win for the UFC, and it's a win for the fans.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Well, Longo's lock of the week, 0-1. You had over a round and a half for McGregor Cerrone. So no 100 push-ups for me this week.
I got to tell you, I don't think there's anybody worse than me at this point.
You're 0-1. What do you mean? We just started.
What about Macy Barber? I thought that was a lock.
Bro,
you know?
Everybody did.
Yeah, that was crazy. Hats off to Roxanne. What a nice girl and... What a huge win for her, and, you know, speedy recovery to Macy. I think she's a sweetheart with a huge future, and
no
obviously that knee was compromised pretty bad.
Yeah. All right, my man. Well, we appreciate your time and your candor, as always, buddy. We'll let you fly, man. See you soon, all right?
All right, guys. Take it easy. Stay warm.
Ray.
There he is. Ray Longo Minute every week here on the Anakin Florian podcast. That was crazy. Roxanne Modafferi and Macy Barber. And Macy, of course, has a lot of qualities and prerequisites to being a champion for sure. Showed you all that heart. But, bro, I know you said a little squeeze on Raquel, huh?
For Roxanne. Yeah, for shits and giggles. They said, take a little bit. Yeah. Just do it. See what happens. And sure enough, she pulled it off, man. Obviously, there was an unfortunate injury there to Macy, but Roxy is sneaky good, man. She can upset a lot of those good fighters in that division, and it was happy to see a true veteran like Roxy, one of the sweetest people you'll ever meet. You know, definite martial artist, and she's been in the game for a long time. She deserves that praise and that win.
And she's really changed herself around physically, Kenny. Whole strength and conditioning program for 3 straight fights under this guy, Lorenzo Pavlica. I mean, you saw real definition in her up on that scale. Also said she's been working with a new Muay Thai coach there at Syndicate, right? So throwing those elbows. Said she's like busted. Like, she busted somebody real bad in the gym, right? With the elbow, right? And then caused that cut on Macy. Yeah. Goddamn Barber, the -1,000 favorite. So love Macy. Do believe she'll get belted one day. But for Roxanne Modafferi, huge result over the weekend. For Conor McGregor, Kenny, you know, I've been pretty steady in my conviction and belief that Conor really was back for legacy. And these are wins that really are going to help him going forward. I am disappointed that people are going to denigrate it. I know that maybe this matchup lacked a little juice because Donald Cerrone had lost 2 in a row, but I hope that people will give Conor credit for this performance. And the thing is, even in a matchup that maybe didn't lend itself to him having getting a bunch of style points because he was supposed to go out and win, would people be happier? They probably would be if it went 7.5 minutes or more and he got touched a few times and had to dig deep a little bit or whatever it may be. to me, look at this, clean, untouched, puts himself in line to maybe make this back-to-back training camps and turn around quickly if they could somehow add a pay-per-view or figure it out. I just don't know what people are looking for, and it's either I'm a shill or, you know, with respect to Ray, I just, you know, people need to give this guy more credit in my humble fan opinion.
I absolutely believe that, and listen, you know, people have a certain perception of Conor McGregor. It doesn't matter what he does. People are always going to see him in a negative light based on what he's done or what he said or, you know, the reports of the news or whatever. And I think Conor McGregor has made a concerted effort in having a different approach energetically to fights. I think we saw that against Cowboy, showed a lot of respect. He seems like a changed man now. It seems like he's really dedicated to just improving as a martial artist and staying in the gym and getting better, as he should. And that is about staying on the path of staying on the warrior's path. And I think that when you reach that kind of stardom and that kind of, you become that kind of celebrity, it's easy to kind of drink it up and believe that you are something else. And if you are doing that something else, it's taking away from your ability to become a better athlete, a better right. martial artist. And I think, you know, he looked at himself, I think, very honestly and said, what the heck am I doing here? I'm wasting precious time. I have this gift. I enjoy fighting. This is what I should be doing. And if I'm doing anything else, it's taking away from my profession yeah. and from my legacy. And I think he has taking a serious look at himself. He's saying all the right things. He certainly looked phenomenal. Who has finished Donald Cerrone quicker than Conor McGregor at 170 pounds?
Right.
Nobody. I mean, he did it quicker than Darren Till. He did it quicker than Masvidal. You know, right? Didn't he?
Yeah. I believe he did. I know Dos Anjos was close to a minute. That was at 55 in a body right. shot.
Right. And McGregor didn't get touched. He didn't get, right. I mean, there wasn't a mark on him. He didn't really get hit. It was just all Conor McGregor. And you look at everything that Conor McGregor was dealing with, you know, over the last few months and all the pressure and, you yeah. know, all the stuff outside. I mean, there was a lot to deal with. And the fact that Conor McGregor was to pull it off in this manner against a veteran like Donald Cerrone, I think deserves some praise. Look at the resume. Look at the people that he's beaten. Take away all your perception of him, what he said. Look at what he's done. It's extremely impressive.
You hit a lot of good points, and I'm glad I don't have to make him. Two other things I'll add. There's a lot of motivation in this man, right, just as an athlete, to do a lot of the things that you lined out, right? And that's really a big part of this, because the kids are a part of it too, right? And that it is sure. giving his life some regularity, and it makes doing all of that recreational stuff harder, because the kids are jumping on you at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, right? It's like, if you want to be a doting dad, and all indications are that that is what he is, then they become a centerpiece of your life, if not the center of your life, and everything else works around that. And I think that's helped Conor McGregor a lot, but he's just supremely motivated as an athlete. And all roads are now open, Kenny. The question is, undisputed welterweight title shot is there. Undisputed lightweight title shot could be there if he just wants to wait. We said a win was going to open all roads, but everybody is pointing to this fight against Jorge Gamebred Masvidal. You know, the March 7th pay-per-view has two title fights on it. When you look at the way the calendar aligns, International Fight Week could be his, of course, but Conor kind of wants to put a training camp on top of a training camp here, and that would lean towards March or April. I mean, how soon do you think they could put this Masvidal fight together, and do you think absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, that the next fight for Conor is going to be Gamebred? Because Dana seemed to intimate that he wants to do the Khabib-Conor rematch and see Gamebred fight Kamaru Usman for the welterweight title without an obvious number one welterweight contender right now. Your thoughts?
Let's talk about the Masvidal fight. That's the biggest fight that the UFC can put together, period. Okay. If they're trying to build their business up and make the biggest fights possible while you can, you jump on the Masvidal Conor McGregor fight. Imagine a 4 or 5 city tour with those two hyping up the fight. Yeah. It would bring in millions and millions of dollars for the UFC. I also think that, you know, talk about legacy wise, look at Masvidal. He is absolutely in his prime. He has been just decimating his competition right now. If Conor went out and beat Masvidal, right? Or for that matter, if Masvidal went out there and beat McGregor, it would just elevate you know, one of those guys has the true biggest star in the UFC right now. Yeah. I think that's a fight that needs to happen. I think both of those guys' skills are at a very high level. I think we would have an extremely entertaining fight. What's so intriguing about it is that it's a very difficult fight to call. And for that, I think you have, you know, your hardcore Masvidal fans, you have your hardcore McGregor fans, and you have your haters on both sides. That is a huge fight that has to happen. And I think it's the second most impressive, it would be the second most impressive win, legacy-wise, if you're talking about that, for Conor McGregor. The first, of course, would be if he got that rematch win over Khabib Nurmagomedov. But obviously, with that fight against Tony Ferguson, that would push it a little bit further down the line. Why not fight at 170 pounds? It does not affect him at 55. Just take the fight. He always has that Khabib fight, you know, maybe Khabib's 30th fight, and he either goes out and retires or whatever. So I think the stars are aligning for that kind of fight. That's what should happen. It's very rare that you have two superstars that can fight each other in fight sports. Make it happen.
Right. Strike while the iron's hot. Right. Yeah. Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre never fought, right, because the timing
in their
maybe
prime,
wasn't perfect at times, you know. But, yeah, this is certainly the fight to make, according to most fans. Every fan I talked to in Vegas, they either were talking to me about this podcast or talking to me about that fight. And this was before Conor McGregor went out and did that to Donald Cowboy Cerrone. It's interesting you talk about legacy and what win would give his legacy the biggest strength in, if you would, right? Because I went on Toronto radio station this morning, and they asked me the same question, and I didn't necessarily have the obvious answer. So you seem to believe avenging the loss to Khabib legacy-wise might be bigger than a Masvidal win, or not necessarily. Yeah, okay. Let me ask you this. Okay, let me ask you this. So would the biggest win for his legacy, I guess it would be Khabib, but an Usman win, right, given that matchup, right, would be tremendous. But you're, at least right now, you're not front of the line for him getting an undisputed welterweight title shot.
Yeah, and also as far as, you know, Usman, I'm not so interested in it. Listen, Usman is a tremendous fighter. I just think he's way too big for Conor. I almost think it'd be like a bully style match. I don't know. I think we kind of know what the result of that is. I just think Usman's way too big. That guy could fight at 185 pounds, you know, and Conor is a true 155-pounder. Masvidal has fought at 155 pounds as well. He's not the biggest 170-pounder either. If we're talking about quality matchmaking, that's the one that needs to happen. And, of course, what a story it would be if he was to go out there and beat the undefeated Russian, this guy who has been an absolute juggernaut, a guy who really dominated him in that first fight, to come back and pull off a win against Khabib would be tremendous. And I think it would set up Conor to actually look like a hero in some ways and play the good guy role. Right. And so, I don't know.
Well, if Conor McGregor fights again before June, you know, those who suggested that this was a money play, you got no choice but to eat some crow. And I've eaten a lot of crow in my days, obviously, as a broadcast journalist or whatever, right? But, like, the dude is back for his fighting season and for legacy. And that comeback, say what you will about it, but it's off to a damn good start. Someone also mentioned Colby Covington on Twitter as a potential opponent, right? Just in terms of the talk, I mean, maybe that fight has some legs at some point down the road. We'll see. So, Ken Flo, one thing before we spin it forward, I just want to say you were so convicted on Conor McGregor early in this fight, right? And it's tough because, like, you're making your picks on Monday. You don't have the benefit of fight week or the weigh-in or anything else. And when you pick a guy to win by first-round knockout, you're also picking some dude to get knocked out in the first round. Yeah. And that's kind of the way it is. And in this day and age of social media, you know, you can't be sure it didn't register on Cerrone's radar. It kind of is what it is. But certainly you kind of felt that this would be one-sided, and that was the way it went down.
I felt strongly about it. You know, I hate that. I hate having to pick against another fighter, especially saying that the guy doesn't have much of a chance. You know, Cerrone did have a chance. I just didn't like, assuming both fighters came in the way that they typically come into a fight and the way that their skills match up, I didn't love that fight for Cerrone early. He had to get by that first round and kind of get his wits back in that second and get his mojo back in order to do something against Conor, in my opinion. And obviously, he never got there. Another thing I will say, it's also hard to judge Conor off of a 40-second performance as well. Sometimes it's a little bit too quickly. It's impressive what he did for that amount of time. But, you know, to really say that Conor is back, perhaps we should have seen at least three solid rounds. And I think in some ways, Connor and his camp wanted to see him get into the championship rounds to get that feel for the octagon back. Connor mentioned him getting a little excited at times during that fight. Octagon time is octagon time. I think the more time you have in there, especially after a long layoff, it just feels good to have that as a fighter.
Absolutely.
To have that, you know, that mental feel, that physical feel, the rhythm and feeling comfortable in there. Connor is certainly, you know, he shines brightest when the lights come on. So I don't think that's an issue for him. Ring rust and all that stuff, he always shines. But as a fighter, you're trying to log in some minutes and get experience to get better. And, you know, it's a difficult situation to just judge Connor on 40 seconds as well.
Yeah, and some people would feel better about Connor's chances in a Masvidal fight had this one gone 6 or 7 minutes.
Right.
I kind of feel like Cerrone's a dangerous fighter, despite what we saw in those 40 seconds. So, Connor, you might as well just get him out of there, right?
Yes.
Don't give him a chance to try to kick you in the head.
This
because, again, this could have gone very, very differently. People just don't understand that, right? Fighters understand it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to spin this thing forward, probably more on Connor and Cerrone throughout the show, but we need to get to the pronunciation of the week. We did not do it last week. All right, TJ, let's see if you can get off to a good start here. This woman will face Justine Kish at flyweight in Raleigh, North Carolina this weekend. TJ, who am I talking about, kid?
If I get this right, it'll be a bigger upset than Roxanne Modafferi.
Well, hang on. Did this woman fight in Invicta FC that I threw out here or no?
He
doesn't even know.
Let me check my definitely fight. Not.
Okay. All right. Well, how do you pronounce her name then?
Lutsi Pudilova?
Let's hear Lucia. It's pronounced, I believe.
Starts. Lucia Pudilova. Lucia Pudilova.
She has a very deep voice.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's why it threw me for a loop. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's a guy talking.
Yeah, so part of the... Yeah, you were afraid we had a screw-up. We don't want any screw-ups after losing the first 7 minutes of the show last week. So
2.5, come on now.
So it's interesting. Part of the reason I had the file played today is because oftentimes you'll have a coach or a manager say the fighter's name, and that's what we have here. She is female, and it is Lucia Pudilova, so it's an 0-1 for DeSantis here in 2020. All right. We got to make some picks. Huge start to 2020 for Team Florian. Let us get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fight! I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Oh, it feels good to be picking some fights after that three-week hiatus. UFC 246 is in the can, as they say. 8-4 for Team Florian out of the chute. No such issues with a slow start here in the new decade. If you want to know about the dispersal, 3 points for Connor by first-round knockout. Also, the under a round and a half. Ken Flo convicted as ever. Both got 3 points for Holly Holm by decision. So you get Holly, the decision, of course, 3 rounds, which you had accurately. Otherwise, not a great week, but we spin it forward. It is UFC Fight Night. Blades versus Dos Santos. 5 fights for us total. We will start in the strawweight division. Angela Hill minus 165. Hannah Cyphers plus 145. Angela Hill, busy 2019. She fought 4 times, at least one of those on relatively short notice. She went 2-2 on the year. Here she draws the no-nonsense North Carolina native Hannah Cyphers. Ian Parker, nice to see you. Who do you have here, Hannah Cyphers or Angela Hill?
Gentlemen, Kenny, congratulations on picking the exact fucking result of the main event. I hate you. I was really hoping you would get out of that first round, but whatever. I don't want to rant on that. I'll take the loss like a man. This is probably one of the only fights where I would actually bet on Angela Hill. I think in regards to the size differential here, Hannah is very small for this division. She's very tough. She comes forward. But I think that Angela Hill's takedown defense is good enough with her strength and athleticism to keep Hannah at bay. I think her striking is going to be way better, faster, way more power there. So without taking this and dragging this thing out, I like Angela Hill here. For the first time in a betting situation as her as a favorite, I will probably bet on Angela Hill, and I like her in this fight.
Kemp Flo, Hannah Cyphers has won 2 straight overall, 10-3. Pro losses all against good competition. Tough, hits hard, works hard. Works on a farm, actually, so farmers work hard. Campbell, what do you think here? Main card fight, Angela Hill, Hannah Cyphers.
Yeah, you could definitely see that Hannah is tough. You've seen her take a lot of shots. She keeps coming forward. I do think she has the advantage on the ground. I don't see her getting there so often against Angela. I see Angela really kind of getting on her bike, sticking and moving, stopping the takedown. She's going to be faster on the feet. Hannah's just a little bit stiff, a little bit robotic with her striking at this point in her game from what I've seen so far. So I like Angela Hill on that one by decision.
All right, moving on to featherweight Arnold Allen, the prohibitive minus 275 favorite against the father of two daughters, old reliable Nick Lentz, who comes back at plus 215. Now, I say old reliable in Summerlin. Is he old reliable? Nick Lentz has 14 UFC wins. I think Ken Flo has 12, if I'm not mistaken. By the way, Ken Flo's winning percentage pretty goddamn high with the 12 UFC wins, by the way. But 14 UFC wins for Nick Lentz, only 34 fighters in UFC history have 15 wins or more. So this guy finds a way, but Ian, he's the dog here because Arnold Allen is 6-0 in the UFC. What do you think, Ian? Arnold Allen, Nick Lentz here at 145 pounds.
I absolutely love Arnold Allen as a prospect in general. I think he's the real deal. I think in that last fight against Gilbert Melendez, he showed that he's got all the tools to be a true threat in this division. I think this is such a smart fight for him to not just rush up a ladder. I love Arnold Allen here. I think Nick Lentz, old reliable, is a great name. He's tough. He will come ready to fight. But I think Arnold can handle the bull rush. I think he can handle the wrestling. And I think he's just going to pick him apart on the feet. I love Arnold Allen here.
Kenny, Arnold Allen ranked, I checked this morning, number 15 in the world. Yes. He was actually going to face 10th-ranked Josh Emmett in this fight, or in this spot on this card. So that would have been a great fight, obviously. And he's beaten some tough competition along this 8-fight winning streak. You like him here in Raleigh against the UFC-tested Nick Lentz, or what?
You know, I do. I think that Nick Lentz, if he's able to get in on those legs and take him down, I think he'll really... give a lot of trouble to Arnold Allen on the ground. Arnie, not really known for his ground game. And I think off of his back, Nick Lentz could win a lot of rounds. But on the feet, Arnie just has such a big advantage. I think he's a lot quicker. He's got the knockout power. Nick Lentz tends to struggle, I think, in the transition and the in-betweens. You know, utilize going from the striking into the takedowns. I think he might get caught there against someone like Allen. So I like Arnold Allen there as well.
Have you trained with Arnold Allen, Ken Flo?
I have not. He does train at TriStar, and I hear a lot of good things about him. And, he missed out on a great opportunity there against Josh Emmett. That was a big fight.
Yeah, and you got to think he's getting a ranked opponent to put that one back together at some point. But, yeah, I heard you call him Arnie Allen.
Arnie.
Figured that there was maybe you heard Faraz or some of those guys referring to him as such.
Yes, they do. They do. They call him Arnie.
See, I kind of thinking I should have named my son Arnold Anik. Call fucking little Arnie. You know, I
wanted to
name him Pedro. My wife did not like Pedro. But we got to move on, guys. Got to move on. At bantamweight, Alex Perez, minus 255. Jordan Espinosa, plus 205. So Timo Yama's Alex Perez, 9-1 spanning his last 10. Espinosa, born in Connecticut, trains out of New Mexico. Contender Series guy, plus 205 underdog here. We will lead with the flow. Alex Perez, Jordan Espinosa. Who do you have?
I like Alex Perez here. Obviously, I haven't seen a whole lot from either guys necessarily, but for Espinosa, I just think it's a little bit too early to go against someone like Alex Perez. I think Perez gets the win here.
What do you think, Ian? Perez, minus 255, fairly pronounced here. I thought it would be a little bit closer, but I'm probably one of the few guys that's seen all of Espinosa's Contender Series. So what do you think? Perez, the more known quantity, obviously.
If you're the only other person, then I'm the only person that's seen Espinosa betting on him in the Contender Series, because that gave me something to do on Tuesday nights with my addiction. So I agree here. I actually kind of like Jordan Espinosa in this spot. I think, his last fight against Schnell, remember, Schnell's no slouch. And obviously, to Kenny's point, Schnell has gotten better on the ground. And Espinosa was actually winning that fight until Schnell caught the sub, even though it really didn't take that long. Espinosa is a very good wrestler, which I think he has. I know Kenny probably doesn't love that play, but I think Perez getting a decision win over a guy like Mark De La Rosa, I was expecting him to really dominate and get finished in that fight. I think Espinosa, with the odds here, is a pretty fun play. I think he's a live, only because I'm already down 4 points because Kenny was literally perfection on that main event. I'm going to roll the dice with Espinosa's wrestling and think that it's going to get put on his back. And if he does, he can grind out a decision here. I don't love Perez's takedown defense. You know, and Joey Jiu-Jitsu showed that a little bit in their fight. So I'm going Espinosa as the underdog here. That may change because I need a little bit more time to watch both guys on tape. But from what I've seen, I think Espinosa is a live dog.
And I like your analysis, what I heard of it with that fucking Wi-Fi. Co-main event. Far more known quantities here. Former lightweight champ, all-around good egg, Rafael Dos Anjos, minus 260. The Ultimate Fighter Lives, Michael Chiesa. He will always be introduced as such here. Tough Lives, Michael Chiesa, plus 220. Outstanding co-main event. I'm excited to see it, Ian. What do you think here about Chiesa's chances as a plus 220 dog against RDA?
You know what? At first, I was really leaning RDA because of the striking difference here. But after watching Chiesa's size difference and the way he was able to manhandle at 170, and if this becomes a grappling match, which I think it will, dirty against the cage, I think Chiesa is going to be the much larger guy. I think the height difference is going to make a huge difference in that clinch. I think I'm going to roll the dice here and take Maverick. I like him here. There's something about that size. He just looked healthier. That weight cut didn't bother him. He seemed super confident. He knew what he was doing. It was no second guessing in that game plan. As much as I am a big RDA fan, I always have been, I think Chiesa is going to give him some problems. So I'm going with the underdog also in this fight.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Huge, huge spot for Chiesa. It is the co-main event, so I will get your method of victory in a round. You got Chiesa the dog in our scoring system. That would give you an extra 2 points. How's he get it done, though?
Sorry. He's not knocking out RDA. I don't think he's ever knocked out anybody. So if he's going to do it, I think it's going to be a late round submission. I hate to say round four sub. I'm going to go round three sub. I'm hoping he's able to take the back of RDA and finish by rear naked choke.
If he Ken Fuss, look at his chops that you were going to go round four sub in a 3-round fight. You see that?
Yeah, that would have been impressive.
That would have been awesome. That
off.
Can you imagine?
I caught myself. That's like the video game where they there's one of those like glitches and you got broken in the axle.
Yeah, caught yourself.
Glitch going on in the game.
Yeah, speaking of glitches.
Yeah, speaking of glitches, TJ, right here in every other goddamn word. Hey, Ken Flo, so some research this morning. Dos Anjos tied for 7th on the UFC's all-time wins list.
Wow.
But he has lost 3 of 4 overall, most recently to Leon Edwards. Only losses, though, since 2011 have all been to elite guys. So 6 losses for Dos Anjos since 2011. 5 of them have been to fighters who have a UFC championship belt of some kind at home. So only really loses to the top guys. That's not what he's facing here. Chiesa could go on to become that. Yeah. But these are the fights that Dos Anjos has made a career of winning. Chiesa going for 3 straight wins. Carlos Condit, Diego Sanchez, now he gets RDA. Who wins the co-main? How do they get it done?
Well, thank you for setting that up, because that's exactly why I'm picking RDA at this point. Michael Chiesa might be that guy, but as of right now, I just don't see him beating RDA. I think it's going to be difficult for him to get those takedowns. I think that's where he could win this fight. I do think that in a lot of ways he'll be the better grappler against someone like RDA. However, RDA isn't bad in that department either. I think his leg kicks matching up against Chiesa, I think, will be the difference. If he's able to slow Chiesa down, I think it will only get worse for Mike. Michael really needs to get in the clinch, slow RDA down, grind him down, and then in that second and third, really kind of turn it on and try to hit some takedowns there. If he's able to do that, Chiesa can absolutely win this fight, and it would be cool to see him do that. I just think RDA is going to, you know, with his experience, is going to be able to outstrike him, keep this fight on the feet, and really shine. I'd like to say a TKO, but I'm going to play it safe. Oh, Ken Flo with the decision win here.
All right, Rafael Dos Anjos by decision, the pick for Ken Flo on the co-main event, which brings us to the headliner, Curtis Razor Blades. Has anyone made like a Blades of Steel t-shirt with this guy like grounding and pounding someone yet?
Love that video game. What a great reference. Love
Curtis Blades minus 245, Junior Dos Santos plus 205. So Blades, obviously an interesting case. Most of our listeners know his only pro losses are by knockout to Francis Ngannou. So undefeated except for fights against that guy. kind of needs Jairzinho Rozenstruik to beat Ngannou in Columbus to open up a championship path here in 2020. But if he gets past Junior Dos Santos, it's a huge feather in his cap. And I think he'll probably realize a title shot next year, this year, I should say, if he wins. Ian, what do you think? I mean, he's really starting to brutalize guys on the ground. JDS's takedown defense has obviously held up in the past, but has been tested by a lot of wrestlers. What do you think about the main event here in Raleigh? And give us a prediction.
First and foremost, I want to apologize for the Wi-Fi. I don't know why it's giving you guys issues, but I do apologize. I don't want to obviously be that guy, but I am sorry for that. I think this is Curtis Blaydes' opportunity to really, like, this is the matchup he needs. I don't see, man, this is kind of like a lesser version of Ngannou at this point. I think JDS is kind of on the end of his career. I think Blaydes' striking has come leaps and bounds. Is my audio better, by the way, right now or no?
Yep.
Okay, sorry. Leaps and bounds from where he was. I think if he's got to utilize his wrestling game, though. He cannot get cocky and confident that, with Bang's blueprint that he's able to really outstrike, because JDS can turn that around with one power strike. So I do like Curtis Blaydes here. I think he's going to wrestle him to death. All right, I think it's going to be, I hate to say, a five-round decision here for the heavyweight. So I think he finishes JDS on the ground by ground and pound in the third round. I think that is the only way he really gets this done. I don't want to see him try and jab his way to victory here. He's got to use what got him to where he was, understand his identity, and use the striking just to set up those takedowns. So I'm going Curtis Blaydes, third round TKO.
Ken Flo, Junior Dos Santos had to pull out of a fight late in 2019. His last fight, Francis Ngannou, on the wrong end of that in the main event in June in Minneapolis. Then he was on Dancing with the Stars Brazil. And I'm interested to hear the media ask him about it this week. And I can assuredly tell you, without hearing what he has to say, that he's going to say it was hugely beneficial for muscles that he's not working otherwise and everything else. I'm curious to see him back here against a really tough stylistic challenge in Curtis Blaydes. What do you think about the main event matchup and who gets it done?
This is a really tough one for me to pick. I feel like Junior Dos Santos will actually change as a fighter, even within the actual fight. You'll see, flashes of brilliance, and then you'll see him really kind of shut down with his offense a lot of times. He's not an easy guy to take down, though. I think Curtis Blaydes does have a good wrestling background. I think he could be dangerous with his own striking as well, does have some power. But I think he's going to struggle, especially early on with his takedowns, I believe. I think he could start to hit those takedowns a little bit later in the fight, perhaps, as he slows down Junior Dos Santos and keeps him guessing a little bit. But I like Junior Dos Santos here. I actually think he's going to be able to stop a lot of those takedowns. I don't think it's going to be a pretty fight, but I think Dos Santos will outpoint him enough to win rounds and win by decision.
JDS by decision for Ken Flo. 13th UFC main event for the former champion, Cigano. I absolutely love that. Ken Flo, do you have an impression of Junior Dos Santos? Maybe next week if he wins, you can give us one.
I need to watch some video and really kind of analyze a little bit better. Next week. Yeah.
I'll give you a hint. I tried to get one good enough for air today and couldn't do it, so I'm going to leave you with that. But you have to be smiling when you're delivering the lines,
absolutely.
I think, because that's a good way to capture it. All right, Ian Parker on social media at Parker Cage Hero. Thank you, buddy. We will talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Thanks, guys. Looking forward to it. Kenny, I'm making the comeback this week. Don't get comfortable.
There we go, baby. See you, Ian.
All right, UFC Fight Night, Blaydes v. Dos Santos, wall-to-wall on ESPN Plus coming up this weekend. All right, before we go, Ken Flo, I know you are off to the United Kingdom.
Yes.
Ian, you can hang up your phone. TJ, can we get rid
I
of this guy?
But
the duck. See ya. Bye. Thanks, bud. Love you.
Hold on. I thought TJ wanted to kick me off. I was giving him the opportunity. Peace. Love you guys.
See ya, buddy.
What a creep, just hanging out in the corner like that.
Seriously.
Are they going to bring me back on and ask me about Connor? Nope, not today. Not today, because we got to talk about Ken Flo's seminar in the United Kingdom. So Ken Flo's, in all likelihood, not going to be with us next Monday here on the Anakin Florian podcast, because he's going to be in the UK doing a jiu-jitsu seminar. He may join us by phone. So I know you're going to be across the UK. I know if people want more details, they can go to your Instagram or your social media, at Kenny Florian. I know some of these cities, it is standing room only at this point.
That's the hope.
There are still spots available, as I understand it, in some of these spots if they want to train and meet you and all of that stuff beginning next Monday, January 27th.
That's right. I'm actually heading to the UK on Saturday. I'm excited to be there. Got a bunch of seminars lined up and can't wait to train with you guys and have a good time.
How about that?
Yeah.
Canflo's UK tour begins 1 week from now. We got to get on out of here. I don't know if you have any final thoughts. I did want to ask you before we go about Alexei Olenek and Maurice Greene, because I know you saw that fight, and even just hearing the word scarf hold sounds uncomfortable to me. Definitely want to laud the toughness of the crochet boss Maurice Greene, but how about Alexei Olenek, right? Getting it done at this stage of his career. Had the Quintet Ultra grappling appearance against the King, Gordon Ryan, this summer. Those two, I think, have aligned. It was hard for me to hear in my call with Olenek. A few things got lost in translation, but I believe they're going to train together in the future. And I don't know, man. Jiu-jitsu is just so fascinating for me. My favorite way to see a fight end is by submission. And this dude, Olenek, and the squeeze, there were just so many angles to this. I want to give you 60 seconds on that.
You know, this is such a testament and such a win for grappling in general. I mean, how many 46-year-old veterans with well over 50 fights could do that as a striker in the UFC? It's a difficult thing to do as a striker, you know, seeing all those miles. But as a grappler, you could still be very dangerous, even, you know, at his age and the amount of fights that he's had. It was really cool to see Olenek go out there and get the win. You know, he's not the fastest guy out there, but man, he makes it work. He's extremely effective. He's good at finishing fights. Olenek's the man, dude. I mean,
and
what else can you say?
And just withstanding whatever striking storm he needs to, and
yes,
understanding that, you know, got to get those breaths in, right? I mean, just incredible. Yeah. And you say, you know, 50-plus pro fights. How about 46 submission wins and
insane,
72
dude.
Pro MMA fights?
Slightly off, yeah.
Not to speak of all the combat sambo and everything else.
Crazy.
So,
crazy.
The boa constrictor. Oh, and he's got five kids, by the way, if that's
man.
Not enough. So if you're any kind of father and you have five kids, your life is a lot of fun.
That's a warrior. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fucking warrior. Exactly. All right, we got to get out of here. Thank you to our producer, TJ DeSantis. Good to have him back in studio this week. Mike Heck, our guy on the video side. Plenty coming up on Instagram at AnnaFlorianPod this week. You can watch the show on YouTube, of course. Listen anywhere podcasts are ingested. And we're right back with you next week. Kenfo won't be with us, but we will be back to look at what Curtis Blaydes or Junior Dos Santos was able to do in that main event. Michael Chiesa, Rafael Dos Anjos. Thank you all for listening. Kenfo, safe travels, my man. With that,
thank
for the flow. Longo, the duck, John Anderson. So long for now. We will see you next week. Enjoy the action on ESPN Plus. Yo, fuck it, later.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.